Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 7, entitled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha, text number 11. And I'll just chant it by myself. Bhavastavaya krita dir na suknat anuragata udkanchat baspakalaya samparitam sutam smaram. Translation. King Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter, Sati, his eyes filled with tears, and in bereavement his voice choked up, and he could not say anything. Text 12. Kratsat sanstabhya chamana prema vivalita sudhi shasamsa nirvyalikena bhavena samprajapati. Translation. At this time, King Daksha, afflicted by love and affection, was very much awakened to his real senses. With great endeavor, he pacified his mind, checked his feelings, and with pure consciousness began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. Text 13. Dakshu vacha buyan anugraha ahu bhavatu krito me dandastraya mai brito yada pripalabda na brahma bandhusu chava bhagavan avangya tubhyam haris chakutte eva dritta vratisu. Translation. King Daksha said, my dear Lord Shiva, I committed a great offense against you. But you are so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you've done me great favor by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified brahmanas. Why then should you neglect me, who am engaged in performing sacrifices? Purport. Although Daksha felt defeated, he knew that his punishments were simply the great mercy of Lord Shiva. Remember that Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are never neglectful of the brahmanas, even though the brahmanas are sometimes unqualified. According to Vedic civilization, a descendant of a brahmana family should never be heavily punished. This was exemplified in Arjuna's treatment of Aswatthama. Aswatthama was the son of a great brahma, Dronacharya, and in spite of his having committed the great offense of killing all the sleeping sons of the Pandavas, for which he was condemned even by Lord Krishna, Arjuna excused him by not killing him because he happened to be the son of a brahmana. The word Brahmabandhusu used here is significant. Brahmabandhu means a person who is born of a brahmana father, but whose activities are not up to the standard of the brahmanas. Such a person is not a brahmana, but a Brahmabandhu. Daksha proved himself to be a Brahmabandhu. He was born of a great brahmana father, Lord Brahma, but his treatment of Lord Shiva was not exactly brahminical. Therefore he admitted it, that he was not a perfect brahmana. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, however, are affectionate even to an imperfect brahmana. Lord Shiva punished Daksha, not as one does his enemy. Rather, he punished Daksha just to bring him to his senses, so that he would know that he had done wrong. Daksha could understand this, and he acknowledged the great mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva towards the fallen brahmanas, including even himself. Although he was fallen, his vow was to execute the sacrifice as is the duty of brahmanas, and thus he began his prayers to Lord Shiva. Om Agyana Timirannasya Gyanandana Salakaya Chuksuro Miritam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namah. So, first of all, we see that Daksha committed an offense to Lord Shiva, subsequently received a reaction. And when he received the reaction, he suffered very much. And we see that the suffering brought him to the point of becoming humble and becoming submissive, and in the end he's even offering prayers to the Supreme Lord. So the power of suffering in reforming an offensive living being is not to be underestimated, right? And although we hate suffering because we are offensive living beings, right, still it is a very powerful arrangement. And we see how Daksha totally transformed. And in the same way we are being transformed. Our false pride is also smashed to pieces again and again. And we are very unhappy with our fate and that we are so unlucky. But actually, we are also, like Daksha, in the grip of false pride. When Indra had become falsely proud of his position and was very upset that Krishna had interfered with the Indra Yajna, which was to be performed by the cowherd man. And after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and so on, then Indra also came to his senses. And Indra came before the Supreme Lord and offered prayers. Then Krishna said, "O Indra, how could a devotee do such a thing? Trying to kill all the residents of Vrindavan by all this, by flooding them? How could a devotee do such a thing?" the Lord said. Indra said, "Well, I was under the influence of false pride, and what can one who is under the influence of false pride not do?" And Krishna said, "Yes, but I never expected such behavior from my servant. I am your master. I took away your sacrifice, the offerings to you, but you are my servant, so I never expected such behavior of my servant." And they said, "Well, what can I do? This pride is very strong." But then the Lord said, "Yes, but you should have removed this pride by intelligence." Right? And then Indra said, "Yes, but I became very angry. And when anger is very strong, then all intelligence is lost." So that's a very interesting series of points being made in that discussion. Because first of all, it points out that a devotee is supposed to overcome his pride with intelligence. And that one can remove pride, false pride, with intelligence. That's not like an insignificant statement. Because pride is such a thing that it destroys everything. Pride is the number one enemy of spiritual life. Pride is never accepted by Krishna. And it can be removed by intelligence. We see another example of pride in the dealings with Lord Chaitanya. There was the case of a Kashmiri pundit, such a learned pundit who was very proud and just walking around everywhere. And this proud pundit, Lord Chaitanya, once made a statement and said that this pride will soon be broken. Because the Lord will never accept pride. Never. Never. He will break it. He will smash it. So, in this way, we have to see that all these examples are given of how pride is being smashed. So we have to be careful with our tendency towards pride. Because pride is a natural tendency. And especially in this age of Kali, we are very easy to justify a proud position. And we are considering that normal. So that is one point. Then Daksha suffered tremendously. So in this age of Kali, the falsely proud living entities who are always thinking themselves more intelligent than they are, and who are therefore not relying on the directions of the Supreme Lord, but who are therefore relying on their own limited intelligence, which is the biggest fault of this age. These living entities of Kali Yuga are therefore afflicted by a lot of extra suffering, which is not there in previous ages. And this is what we're all going through. Right? We are all constantly suffering a lot. Just to keep us humble, make us more humble, and so on. Therefore, we have to put this in the forefront. And unless we are taking that message, where will we go? Okay, then the texts continue, since we read a few texts, and then it comes to the current purport where the brahmanas are being glorified. And even a brahmana who is not so qualified is still very qualified. Because a brahmana is a person who is basically dedicating himself to spiritual knowledge, to cultivating spiritual knowledge and distributing spiritual knowledge. And knowledge is the only thing that can save the world. It's transcendental knowledge that saves the world. It is sravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. First sravanam, hearing transcendental knowledge. Without transcendental knowledge, no one will chant. Right? Some people will just chant because they like the music. Right? That is a fact. And that also does it. Right? That does it. But one will not maintain chanting seriously without transcendental knowledge. One has to know that trying to enjoy the senses cannot be the goal of life. One has to know that the soul can never be satisfied in the material world. It is said, I just gave a class in Germany about the soul being in the dormant state, right? We know that when the soul enters into the body, it is as if the soul is asleep, and then only with a little energy is still penetrating the body and giving energy to the body and the mind, and then the thinking, feeling, and willing, which are the functions of the soul, are being executed by the mind. Is it? And nothing can wake up the soul. It is said that the brother of Ravana, Kumbhakarna, was very difficult to wake up. There was that great war with Ram. Ravana had stolen Sita. Ram came with the army of monkey. There was a great fight. All the commanders of Ravana were defeated. It was time for his most powerful brother to fight. But somehow or other, by some higher arrangement, the brother Kumbhakarna used to be asleep most of the time. But if he was awake, he was a total rakshasa, a total monster. So his body was very big, huge it was. And they tried to wake him up. So there were two things about Kumbhakarna. One was, he was a terrible sleeper. And the other one, he had an incredible appetite. So what they did, they slaughtered many oxen and kept it under the nose of Kumbhakarna, all these oxen. And so different men were standing there holding all his flesh under his nose, right? And then at the same time, they tried to make as much noise as they could to wake him up. Didn't work. Kumbhakarna would not wake up. By no means. Finally, what they did is they made a fire on his chest, right? They just started a fire on his chest. Right? So then he sort of like opened one eye. Like, and then when he woke up, he immediately devoured all those oxen as well as the men who were offering them. He ate them all immediately. Just swallowed them all. And then woke up and just left and right started to eat bodies. Right? Then Kumbhakarna went to battle and just ate many of the monkeys, just one after another, just like devoured them and just like ravaged the army of Ram. Right? Okay. So much about Kumbhakarna. So he was quite an interesting fellow. But ultimately, Kumbhakarna, although he was hard to wake up, could be woken up by fire because he could be burned by fire. But the soul cannot be burned by fire, it says in Bhagavad Gita. Nainam chindanti shastrani naidam, nainam dati pavakaha, nakli riyanti apu nasuchati marutaha. So the soul cannot be cut, soul cannot be burnt by fire, nor drowned by water, nor dried by the wind and all those things. Because nothing of this material world can touch or attract the soul. Nothing. Nothing. Not all the money in the world can make the soul happy, can make the soul wake up. Not sex. Not all the sex in the world either can wake up the soul. Nothing. The soul is just not attracted at all, right, by all these things. Yeah. The soul can only be attracted by Krishna and by devotional service to Krishna, by the internal energy. And that is the point. So that's transcendental knowledge, and that we have to know thoroughly. And if that transcendental knowledge is not disseminated into the world, right, then it's the end of the world. Then indeed we can say, the end of the world is near. The end of the world is near. Right? But because there are brahmanas who are protecting transcendental knowledge and cultivating transcendental knowledge and teaching transcendental knowledge purely, such brahmanas are to be held in the highest esteem. Even if they have some bad character, even if sometimes there are some weaknesses in their character, at least they are upholding transcendental knowledge. And that's our saving grace. We need that transcendental knowledge. Without transcendental knowledge, where will we go? We will just go nowhere. Right? That's all. Just going from nowhere to nowhere. And just in between, being nowhere. And making no progress and getting nothing, right? You know, going nowhere, coming from nowhere, getting nothing, right? That's all. And that's what's going on. And that's what we've been doing for so many lives. Yad brahmatam upāryadā. In this universe, sometimes up, you know, and enjoy being a demigod. It's so wonderful. Flying. What a wonderful life I have being a demigod. Ah, what wonderful things. Everything is great. And then, ksine punye marcha lokam visanti. Then piety is finished. Then fall down to the to the lower regions. What's the benefit? Transcendental knowledge rejects such ecstasy. And who wants wings? Who wants to fly if you have to fall at the end? What's the gain? I sometimes give that example. We're going to have the party of the year. Everything you always wanted will be there. But at the end, everyone will be shot. Will you come? Huh? Will you come to such party? But that's what the heavenly planets are. It's the most wonderful party you could imagine. There is no better party. And then at the end, you will be shot. Right? Are you ready to come to my party? That's all right. Not so interested. Huh? We're not interested. But maybe in heavenly planets we are. So this is the influence of Maya. But transcendental knowledge, yet anujasina yukta karma grinti nibandana, cuts through this Maya. It cuts through this illusion. Right? And just makes it all clear, exposes it for what it is. False happiness. And we say, for so long, I have foolishly pursued all this false, illusory happiness. What is happiness if the end result is misery? No, I will no longer invest any energy in this direction. From now on, I'll surrender to Krishna. This is the result from transcendental knowledge. Then one can take up the process of kirtan, of Harinam Sankirtan, of chanting the holy name. Then one can surrender, right? It said, and then one can remember. When one remembers Krishna, then one can remember. And then Padasevanam, then one can surrender. Then one can bow down. So first transcendental knowledge, then we can chant, then we can remember, and then we can bow down to the lotus feet of the Lord. And when we bow down to the lotus feet of the Lord will deliver us. Bowing down to the lotus feet of the Lord means sarva-darbam parichayamam ekam saranam vraja, to give up everything, all occupations, and simply take up devotional service. Then Krishna said, aham tam sarva-bhapebhyo moksha-yasyami ma-sucha. Then I will deliver you from all karmic reactions. On Krishna's lotus feet, the signs are indicating, the thunderbolt is showing that we will be delivered from the karma. So that when we think, I have such heavy karma, how can I overcome it? I have all these material desires, how can I be free from it? How can I surrender to Krishna? Krishna says, I'll smash your karma. But what about my mind? My mind is so strong, I cannot control it. My mind is stronger than I. I want to become a devotee in my heart, but then my mind plagues me, harasses me, and just doesn't leave me at peace. Then what can I do? His mind is too strong. I cannot ignore it. It's just harassing me. It's too powerful, too powerful. Krishna says, no. Look, on my feet there is this stick for controlling the elephant of the mind, right? With the hook and the point. So the mind will also, your elephant mind will be controlled. Don't worry. Okay, Krishna, but, you know, if I just give up everything and surrender to you, who will take care of me? The devotees are not so nice. Who will supply my needs? You know? Huh? Who will supply my needs? You know? And I'm praying to you, but how do I know you answer my prayers? You don't, when I ask you, give me a sign, there is no answer. So I'm faithfully serving you, my Lord, but, you know, meanwhile, I have to also do something to make sure that, you know, that I have some shelter in this material world. It's a heavy place, right? It's not that I'm so much after sense gratification, but I gotta have some place of sanity somewhere, a little corner, a little money I need. I have to buy something, right? How else am I gonna manage, you know? Yeah? So how can I just surrender unto you? And it's not easy to get by nowadays. It's a big effort. It takes a big effort. If I have any time left, I will surely come to you. Yes? But it's not easy. You know, have a job, 8 hours they want you to work, plus 1 hour lunch break, plus going up and down to work. Right? How much energy left? No devotee in your temple works that hard. Right? And, you know, we have to do that. And then on top of that, we have to do devotional service. We are not supermen or superwoman. We are just, you know, trying. But we are also from this age of Kali. We are weak, we admit it. And we want shelter. But how can we take shelter like this? You know, are we getting a chance, a real chance? Krishna says, I understand, I know all this. And that's why I have this barley corn on my lotus feet, which is there to tell you, don't worry, don't worry. I will provide all you need. You just surrender. Didn't Magvari the hunter, who was living from half killing animals and hunting in the forest and then selling the skins, right, as maintaining his family. Then Narada came and told him to stop. Magvari said, how can I stop? I will starve, right? And Narada said, I will maintain you. Yes, but you know, this how will I do it? Narada said, first cut the string of your bow. Cut the string of my bow.
That's like my livelihood.
Yeah. First, cut the string of your bow. Surrender, then I will take care. McGrory did it because he met such a great personality as Narada in person that his faith just grew very big on the spot. But who are we meeting in person? We're not meeting Narada in person, so it's more difficult to cut the string of our bow. We have to do it from a book. We see pictures of Prabhupada, but then didn't meet him. Right? And meanwhile, we're dealing with a movement and a temple president, yes, who is nice or not nice, and, you know, but has his limitations, clearly, you know. And the temple has its limitations. We know only too well. Then, what to do? No, better we work for our own barley corn, right? And then do some service for Krishna. Yes. So these are the conditions that we are facing. But we need brahmanas. We need devotees who are ready to whatever material solution they find, to just live for simple spiritual life and to live on the strength of being spiritual examples and to just generate support from people on the strength on that. It works. On the strength of being a devotee, one can also live and have an economy. Right? Just like when the people saw that McGrory had become a devotee and they saw this hunter who used to kill is no longer killing. Now he's a saintly person. This is amazing. People, they became touched in their heart and they started to give him something. In the same way, one must, a brahmana lives on the goodwill of people. Right? A brahmana lives on the faith that people have in him. That people trust him, that people can see, yes, this person is straight, this person is honest, this person is kind, this person is gentle, this person is generous, this person is forgiving. Yeah? Yes, we will help him. Yeah. That is the strength of a brahmana. It is said the most important quality of a brahmana is kshama, forgiveness. When Jamadagni was going through this, the father of Parasaram was going through the great problem with Kartavir Arjuna, a proud Kshatriya and who finally killed his wife. Right? Then Parasaram became so angry that his mother had been killed, that Parasaram decided to wipe out all the Kshatriyas, and he did. And his father did not approve. His father said like, but why did you not forgive? You know, you are a brahmana. Because Parasaram was a brahmana, was not a kshatriya. And he said, you know, the quality of the brahmana is kshama, to forgive. So why did you not forgive? He said to Parasaram. So it is these qualities of forgiveness, these qualities of honesty, these qualities of being kind and generous and being the well-wisher of others, these qualities of being equipoised, these qualities of being non-political and non-violent are the qualities by which the brahmanas conquer goodwill and by which one conquers hearts. And if the Vaishnavas are supposed to be above brahmanas, then if they don't conquer by goodwill and by conquering hearts, then how will this movement take over the world? It will not. It will not. How will Krishna consciousness grow? It will not grow on a great philosophy alone. It needs people who are becoming thoroughly honest and thoroughly kind, who are becoming very generous in saving the conditioned souls. That is what is required. So Daksha, now smashed, had come from his platform of pride and now was becoming more open to becoming a qualified Brahmana due to being humble, right? And not demanding for himself, but actually being an example. Yeah. And now maybe he could become an example of purity. Who will be? Who will be a Brahmana? Who will be a real Brahmachari? Who will be an exemplary Grihastha? Who will be a sannyasi? Who will conquer by his spiritual example? Who? Those are the devotees that we are looking for. Those are the devotees that are going to make this movement strong. Not the ones that are so concerned with their own material or spiritual security. Who will just be an exemplary devotee? That is the question. With that, I'll end, because we have to leave early. So any questions, any comments? Yes. Yes. Pride, envy are related, but pride is, it's not that there is one enemy, there are many enemies, lust, greed, anger, and so on. But pride, it is said that trinarapi sunichena, tarorapi sahisuna, but one must be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, and that one should take this mantra and string it string the holy name on this mantra like a thread, use this as a thread. In other words, humility is the basis for chanting. So giving up pride, if as long as there is pride, we can never get the mercy of the Lord. Of course, pride leads to envy, because you think, I am so great. Who are they not to recognize my glory? Then we become inimical to others. So these are all related qualities. Yeah. Anyone else? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not a Brahmana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is a transcendental personality. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead has other purposes. His purpose is not to be a Brahmana. His principle is to maintain the order of the universe. And therefore, within his various incarnations, when he appears, he saw that the Kshatriyas were now becoming a disturbance to uphold religious principles. And therefore he could see that Brahminical behavior was now not advantageous, but that it was time for some Kshatriya action and to cut a few heads. Right? Because the Lord has a more transcendental vision even in the platform of a Brahmana. And therefore Parashuram, as an incarnation of the Lord, killed all the Kshatriyas. But from the Brahminical point of view, no. Jamad Agni did not approve. Ksama, he should have forgiven. Yes.
You mentioned that Asudama got excused by Arjuna because he was the son of a Brahmana. I thought it was because Kakuni was pleading for him.
Because, no, first of all, he was the son of a Brahmana. Draupadi was pleading for him was an additional element, right? And he's the son of our teacher, right? So that was a big argument. So it was not just Draupadi. There was also Yudhisthira was like totally not in favor of killing the son of their teacher. Krishna was in favor. Bhima was in favor. Draupadi was getting a little soft also from, I don't want his mother to go through what I went through and all that. And that was part of her element. But Yudhisthira was specifically approaching it from the platform, no, we must protect the Brahminical culture. And Draupadi, Yudhisthira was the king, ultimately. He was the most important person there. But of course, Draupadi was the wife of the queen, so she was also very influential. Yeah. So all these sentiments that came out there were exalted, because all these personalities were exalted. Arjuna was exalted, Yudhisthira, Draupadi, even Bhima, who was very angry and who wanted to kill Aswatthama, and who was ready to take the law in his own hands. He said, if Arjuna's not doing it, then I will do it. And he just was about to get into action when Draupadi jumped in between. No! And then, of course, it is said that Krishna suddenly developed two extra arms, and with two hands held back Bhima, two hands held back Draupadi, and in that way saved the situation. But then Krishna said to Arjuna, but now you have to satisfy us all. Yeah, that meant that Arjuna had to kill him and not kill him. So Arjuna managed to do that by killing his reputation as a brahmana, by cutting off the top knot, right, which was the sign of a brahmana, socially. So socially destroying his reputation as a brahmana. So he killed the brahmana, but yet he did not kill his body. Yeah. Yes, anyone else? Okay. Huh? Yeah, short question, short answer. How many times should we forgive? We should always forgive, right? Always. Although, if a devotee, right, is not following, right, it doesn't mean that we can. If he, Prabhupada said he gets a chance three times. The fourth time he doesn't get another chance. Yeah, to come up to that same level. But at the same time, wasn't that Prabhupada then meant, and then I reject him. Prabhupada also said, I never reject anyone. So always forgive, but not always give everyone the chance to come back in the same position. If someone keeps misbehaving in a certain position, then he may have to be engaged in devotional service in another position. If someone lives in the temple and every time is just totally misbehaving, then the time will come that he will have to serve from outside the temple. But we'll still allow him some service. We will not deny someone devotional service if he comes and begs for it. We'll find some devotional service for him. We will not say, sorry, you blew it. For you, no devotional service. You are the exception. That's not possible for a Vaishnava. We cannot have that attitude. Therefore, we have to be very, very tolerant. A preacher has to be so tolerant. Inclusive, we are just finishing Paravita because we're going to this meeting, so it's just it's really the last word I had spoken. I don't know what to say. Please, I'm sorry.
I came for the meeting also.
Are you coming also? Good. Yeah. Okay, so thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.